Welcome back again to BadQuaker.com podcast. This is Monday, January 9th, 2012, and I even got the right year that time. This is episode 79, podcast number 70, no, I'm sorry, 78, podcast 78. And as always, I have to give disclaimers for background noise. I'm podcasting from the motorhome. I have Nikki the dog with me, and I have Baggy the cat, and I have road noises, a chicken hatchery, an auto body repair shop, and railroad tracks. As usual, our sound quality is not going to be the greatest. But then again, if you're a regular listener of BadQuaker.com podcast, you have grown accustomed to the bad audio that we have. I'm a little off today on my podcast. If you're not aware, or if you're not a regular listener of the podcast, we did have a death in the family last week, and we're trying to deal with all the complications that go along with that. And so it's kind of difficult to keep your mind going in a single direction during times like this. So if I sound disjointed, that's my excuse. I'll hide behind that excuse. I kind of got into a thing on Facebook. It wasn't a big deal or anything, but I made some statements, and evidently someone, a right-wing-leaning type of a person, totally misunderstood the point and kind of was offended by it. And that's unfortunate. I was hoping that they could stick around in the conversation and we could, you know, perhaps share some kind of information in a way that could be mutually beneficial, and they could understand my position a little bit better, and I could understand their position a little bit better. Unfortunately, with it being the internet, it was easier for the other person just to run away rather than, you know, think or try to come to any kind of solution to a problem or any kind of understanding as to what the other person is trying to say. So maybe I'll just pick on them and kind of talk about that situation. There was someone linked to a file of Rick Santorum, I suppose his name is. He's one of the thieves that's running for, you know, thief in chief in the presidential run up to the 2012 election that we're supposed to be all excited about and everything, hoping that somehow government can fix the mess that government has caused. That makes a lot of sense. Anyway, somebody linked to a video of his, or a sound bit, I believe it was, of him just making some horrendous statements on the radio during an interview where he essentially, at least he's honest, you know, he's an honest thief. He essentially laid out his anger and his hatred toward libertarianism and made the statement that people shouldn't be just allowed to do whatever they want just because it doesn't hurt somebody. They can't be allowed to do anything that they want. That's terrible. We have to control what people do. We have to lord over other people and tell them how to behave. And, you know, essentially, the point of the discussion was gay marriage. And of course, my point is, why in the world would somebody want the government in control of marriage? Why in the world would anybody who's ever been to a Department of Motor Vehicles, or ever dealt with the Social Security Commission, or ever tried to register how can anybody who's ever actually encountered the stupidity of government then want to turn around and trust government to define marriage? This just is so illogical. For any Christians that are listening, are you really this stupid that you want to allow the government to define what marriage is? Are you so filled with hate towards one group of people that you are willing to give up your private right to determine what marriage is just so they can't have it? Are you really that petty and small-minded? Is that really how you think Jesus would want you to react? All you Christians, think about this. Why is it that what other people do in their own private lives is your business? How is that your business? And the person I was discussing this with says something to the effect of, well, it's the morals in America morals are destroying America. Well, no. That's as stupid as saying that terrorism attacked us on 9/11. Morals didn't do anything because morals are not people. People acted. People do things. Morals don't do anything. And to take the naive and actually silly position that all it takes is for the government to pass a law, and all of a sudden people will behave morally according to the way you want them to behave. To believe that, to accept that, to even ponder that possibility, that just passing a law is going to cause people to behave the way you want them to behave, it's stupid. Now, I asked this question in a different context on Facebook, but I'll repeat it here. You conservatives, you right-wing leaning people, you Republican types, do you think stricter gun laws cause a reduction in gun-related crimes? Do you believe that? Do you believe that tightening the laws on gun ownership can have an effect on crimes that involve guns? Do you think that? Most right-wing people do not believe that. Most conservative people do not believe that tighter laws on guns cause people to be safer or cause criminals not to use guns. And why is that? Why would you believe that the gun laws are ineffective in stopping gun-related crime? Because the criminal is going to do whatever they want to do. They don't care what the law is. The fact that they're a criminal means they don't pay attention to the law. So what does the law do? We have a train coming. I thought we were going to get by with not having a train this time because I actually waited until a train passed and then started the recording. But here it comes. Okay, so that was our train interruption. You can probably still hear the background noise of the train going by. I waited until a train went by to start the recording, and I thought that would give me a time frame without a train so that I could get this recorded, but of course, it never works out that way. So, back to the topic at hand. Most people on the right understand that changing a law about gun ownership does nothing to solve the problem of gun-related crimes. Most people understand that. And yet, they think somehow passing a law against drugs is going to cause people not to do drugs. Or passing a law about marriage is going to suddenly cause people to behave in their minds morally. Like passing any law is really going to accomplish what it is that these worshipers of the state hope to accomplish. And really, that's what it is. It really is the worship of the state. When you believe that the state is your salvation, you believe that the state can correct the immorality that exists in society. When you believe that, you're placing actual faith in a religion of the state. You are denying God, you're denying God's creation, and you're placing your faith in the state. And what is the state? The state is a group of people who steal from you, who use aggression on a regular basis. And you have faith that those people can somehow decide the morals for the rest of us. Not you. Not you. You're not going to decide the morals. When you put that authority into the hands of those thieves and those goons that run the state, you don't, it's not your morals. Even if you get a collection of you people and you all vote for somebody that's like you, once they get into the state, once they become part of the state, They're exactly like all the other thieves that are a part of the state. And what are they going to do? They're going to use aggression to force people to behave the way they want. And if you don't like what their decisions are going to be, what are you stuck with? You're stuck with stupid laws. Now, what are you going to do now? You're going to go and get somebody else and try to get him elected so that he can come in and get the laws set up the way you want? And it doesn't matter how many times this process repeats itself and fails and repeats itself and fails. And you still have unfettered faith that somehow doing the same thing over and over is going to produce a different result. But it never does. It always produces more state, more aggression, more taxation, theft, more. Okay, let me back up a little bit and at least get somewhere near my notes. The person in the Facebook discussion prior to them running away resorted to name-calling and statements about age, that they didn't like discussing these matters with children because in the discussion there were other people besides myself. And so the person made the argument that these young people, these 20-year-olds, they're people in their 20s rather, were just not smart enough to know, to be able to present any kind of a coherent argument. And then they ran away, of course, without a coherent argument. Nothing but argumentative accusations and assumptions and name calling and then run away. Well, that's pretty much a typical right wing conservative way of approaching a problem. In that sense, the right wing is exactly like the left. The conservatives are exactly like the liberals. They use basic fallacies. They make wide ranging assumptions based on their predispositions. And then they use name-calling, and then they run away. That's exactly how liberals and conservatives approach pretty much any problem that involves thought. Now, what I've found is, and this is in reference to them claiming that the problem was that they were talking to 20-year-olds. And, of course, that's not me. I passed the half-century mark already, so I'm all on my way downhill, as we do. But here's the thing that strikes me. The question comes to mind, why is it that people shut their minds off somewhere around the age of 45 or so? And they do. I mean, if you really think about it, there are exceptions. There are people that are 45, 50, 55, 60. There are people who are 80 who still think and still learn and still experience new things and are able to discuss something without resorting just to name-calling and anger and emotions and silly things like that. There are people that are older that can do that. But the vast majority of people in the United States that I have encountered, about the age of 45 or so, give or take 5 or 10 years according to the individual, they pretty much shut down their ability to rationalize and think about anything new whatsoever. They've established what they think, what they believe, and they are entirely unwilling to re-examine it. And I think there's a couple of reasons for this, really. One is, and I've done an article on this about the 8-hour day and how it affects wisdom. But I believe that the 8-hour day, 40-hour week, 5 days working, 2 days off, I believe that is a major cause of this of the brain shutting down around the age of 45 or so. As I made the argument in the article titled, I think it was titled "Wisdom and the 8-Hour Day" or "Wisdom of an 8-Hour Day" or something like that. If I remember, I'll put a link. But of course, I don't have that great a memory because I'm over 50. Anyway. But the argument that I made in the article was that when you have the typical 8-hour day, 40-hour week, You wake up in a completely unnatural manner in the morning, in a manner that mimics an emergency. The alarm clock goes off, you leap out of bed, fight to shut the alarm clock off, run around the house, shove some kind of high-carb breakfast down your throat. In the case of most people, it's a Pop-Tart or a donut or even some toast or whatever. It's mostly something to get some sugar into your bloodstream and get you up and moving. You pour some coffee in there or whatever your caffeinated drink of choice is. And you run around like a mad person for a few minutes to get ready. And then you jump in a metal coffin, and as quickly as possible, you pull into traffic, and then you sit there. Now, driving is an experience of total boredom where you have to force yourself to be completely alert at the same time. Now, these are two things that you're asking your brain to do opposite things. You're asking your brain to sit here and don't do anything and remain aware. Now, some of the things we'll do to try to trick our brain into remaining aware is like we'll turn on the radio or whatever, or you'll do some other trick to try to keep yourself awake long enough to get to work alive and not get killed on the highways with the other 40,000 people a year that die on the American highways. So you get to work, and the average American job, the average 8-hour day, 5-day a week, the average American job has you pretty much sitting in a cubicle, again, not thinking, and yet remaining awake and aware. So the average American job is one where the employer doesn't actually want you to think. They just want you to do a few mindless tasks, show up, and don't cause trouble. You know, don't introduce anything new or anything controversial. The average employer doesn't want you to do anything that's going to shake up the standard operation of the business. They just want you to do these simple tasks that they try to make as simple as possible, and then leave and don't change anything. And what this does to your brain is it just teaches it not to think. For years you go to work, you do simple tasks, and you don't think. Now, you might have a job where it involves drafting or it might involve some kind of computer activity, and you say, no, I think. That takes a lot of thinking power when I do these things. Or you might do some other job like that where there's thought involved. Very few American jobs involve original thinking, true problem-solving skills. It's most of that is done in committee in the corporate world. They want as little individuality as possible. So you spend 8 hours doing that at work. You spend 8 hours attempting to stay awake. Every afternoon you're pouring caffeinated drinks or whatever down your throat to try to keep yourself awake long enough to do what? To get back in the metal coffin and get back on the freeway and sit in traffic for, you know, what is the average American commute nowadays? I don't know. Probably close to half an hour that you're just going to sit in traffic in this metal coffin and hope you don't die. And then you get home. And what are you going to do when you get home? Well, everybody else in your household has gone through a different variation of the same process, whether they were in school or in another job or whatever. They went through the same kind of a thing. And so everybody gets home with their minds having just spent 8 hours stuck in neutral. And then you get home and you're worn out because you've done all this stuff all day that has zapped your energy, but it didn't actually exercise your brain. So you're worn out. Everybody's grumpy. Nobody wants to actually, you know, do anything together anymore. And what are you going to do? You stare at the stupid tube for another 3 or 4 hours and let them indoctrinate you? Go over to one of the news broadcasts and let them tell you what you're supposed to think about that? Or watch one of these mindless, you know, sitcoms where canned laughter tells you where the jokes are? I mean, it's, you know, or reality shows where we can, you know, pretend we're somebody important for a few minutes while we watch some reality show. Either way, all you're doing is, these are just mind tricks to just keep your brain from completely shutting off and you just going into a coma. And then we lay down at night and, you know, most people, of course, some people exercise and that probably helps, but most people have spent the whole day with their heartbeat never increasing once due to actual exercise. If their heartbeat did increase, it was probably because they were excited watching somebody else exercise on a TV show, or they were nervous in a meeting, or they were frustrated because they were trying to accomplish some stupid task at work, and people got in their way and wouldn't let them, or you know, something like that is about the only thing that increases the average person's heartbeat. And then you repeat this process day after day, week after week, month after month. And you do this for 20, 25, 30 years. And what you've essentially done is you've taught the brain not to think. And then by the time you get to be about 45 or so, there you are with a brain that just only partially functions. Now, the other thing, the other aspect of this is that when a person gets to be about 45 or 50, somewhere in that range, they have invested a lot of their life in thinking backwards, in believing what the television tells them, in believing that they're doing the right thing in their 8-hour job, and their, you know, they justify all of the investment that they've got in their current lifestyle. And if you come to them and you start to challenge their old way of thinking, that government's the solution, you know, all these things that they think of that they have accepted through public schools and through television indoctrination and through the movies and all these things, all these preconceived notions about this fake history that they've been taught by television and by schools. They've got all this stuff in their head, and they've invested so much of their life based on these things for years and years and years. So now you want them to just take 25 years of a career of not thinking, plus 12 or 14 or 16 years of schooling, all the mental investment that they have there, and just throw it all away and say, guess what? The state is bad. Yeah, the position that they're in here is kind of like a gambler who's on a losing streak. I'm talking about a serious gambler on a losing streak. They don't want to stop gambling. They just can't let it go because they keep thinking, I've already put so much into this game that I have to recoup it. And so they put more into the game and more into the game. And all the time they're thinking, I can't stop now. I've invested too much into this game, or I've invested too much into this slot machine. I can't stop now. I have to keep going until it pays off. And this is the problem. This is, you have to stop. You have to just get up and walk away. Because in this game, you will never win. The state will always win. And the state is evil. Trying to get one person to behave in some way that you want them to behave by using the aggression of the state, that is evil. That's what evil is. You may think, oh, the gay marriage, that's what's evil. No, no, no. It's you trying to force your will on those people. That's what's evil. For you Christians, when they brought the woman to Jesus who had been caught in the act, it says in the Bible, she was caught in the act. They bring this prostitute to Jesus. They throw her on the ground in front of him. They expect him to pick up a rock and begin the stoning process to kill her. They challenge him. And what does he do? He recognizes and shows to them that the real sin here is in them judging her. He never makes any attempt to discuss her or her actions. He puts it back on them. And maybe that's what Christians should do. Instead of trying to get the state to control what is and what isn't marriage, instead of having the state choose winners and losers, ask yourself why you have to have the state in order to produce aggression and cause people to act the way you want them to act. Isn't it possible that it's not your business? That if they're not bothering you, they're not doing anything to harm you. It's just none of your business. Okay, so I think that's the reason why people in about middle ages, that they just shut their minds down. They refuse to accept anything new. They refuse to look in, at anything that they haven't already decided upon. It's because the two things that I can see that affect this is the constant 8-hour day, brain draining activities of work. And the other is that they just get to a point where they've invested too much of their life in this backward thinking. And so they just can't stop. They're like a gambler on a losing streak. They just can't let it go. What you often see with a person when they're experiencing this problem of being given a new problem to solve while all they have is their old conclusions, what you'll often see them do is they will jump to a conclusion. They essentially create a straw man before your very eyes that they of what they believe that you're trying to convince them of, and most of the time it's entirely incorrect. They intentionally choose to believe that you're saying something you're not saying, and therefore they leap to this conclusion that they've already built up in their mind as being correct based on their incorrect assumption of what you believe. Bastiat in That Which Is Seen and That Which Is Not Seen, Bastiat talks about how, actually he says this several times in different writings, so I'm going to horribly paraphrase him and misquote him, but I'm still getting the correct message across. Bastiat says what is the phrase he uses? I think he says this is a false and unjust accusation or something like that. That when we say the government shouldn't do X, that we're somehow against X. Or if we say the government, if there should be no law about X, then we are for X. A different way of looking at it. Well, I'll use the gay marriage thing. To say that the government has no business determining what is and isn't marriage doesn't mean that you're pro-gay marriage or anti-gay marriage or anything about gay marriage. It simply means that the government has no business in marriage. Now, I don't see that as so hard for people to understand, but evidently for the conservative, that's very difficult to understand. The same conservative who can understand that gun laws don't change gun crimes, he can understand that. But he can't understand that if you pass a law about marriage, that somehow people are going to behave morally the way you want them to behave. They're like, you know, like there's two gay men, and one of them looks at the other and goes, "Did you hear? Congress just passed a law outlawing gay marriage." "Really? Well, that's it. I'm going straight now." Are conservatives really this simple-minded? Do they really look at the world in such simplistic terms? Or do they just refuse to look? I think in the statement about Rick Santorum, or one of the statements I made about him, because I've made a few statements about him, because he's such an easy target. I think he said something about how no society had ever been successful with these crazy libertarian ideas of individualism. And, of course, that doesn't define what he calls a successful society, you know, nor does it qualify as any kind of real evidence of anything, because if he doesn't know about it, that doesn't mean it didn't exist. And that's the case with libertarian society. Because you don't know about libertarian societies, because you have chosen not to look into it, because you have chosen to just believe what the television and your school teachers taught you, that doesn't mean that there haven't been successful libertarian societies that existed for thousands of years. All that means is you choose not to look. And I think the phrase that I used on the internet was on the Facebook, that is, I think the phrase I used is that if you close your eyes hard enough, you can't see the sun either. That doesn't mean there's no sun. It just means you've got your eyes closed. And that's, you know, of course the case with individualism. Individualism or libertarianism or anarchy or however you want to think of these things, the lack of the state has been the norm through almost all of the human experience. The existence of the state is the oddity. The vast majority of humans who have ever lived, lived without a state. Throughout most of our history, we existed without a state. At any particular time prior to the 20th century, most of the world was stateless. But, you know, if you twist history and you believe only the parts you want to believe, and if you just buy the story that the state is handing out and you never make any effort at all to learn anything different than that, then I can see how you might think that individuals can't be trusted to run their own lives. So let's see if I can get back to my notes here. I think I covered this one. I wrote down in my notes, inconsistency of conservatives. The question, do gun laws work against gun-related crimes? Of course not. Then why do you think drug laws will work? Why do you expect immigration laws will work to control illegal immigration? Why do you expect traffic laws to work? How is just passing laws and handing out tickets, how do you think that's going to cause people to drive more safely? I did a podcast on this topic, but I should probably bring it back up again. Being in the motorhome and driving across country and so forth, you see these silly, silly signs. Here in Missouri, I believe, I could get this wrong because we've gone through so many states and there's so many variations of this stupidity, but there's signs up threatening you. Hit a worker, hit a road worker, $10,000 fine, lose your license, 8 years in jail or whatever. And it varies from state to state. You know, this works on the premise, or if it worked, it would be on the premise that a person is driving down the highway and they're just getting ready to run over a road worker. And it dawns on them, oh, I'd better not run over that road worker. I'll have to pay $10,000 and lose my license and go to jail if I run over that road worker. So they don't. Right? That's how it works, huh? Is that the way the liberal mind works? They're just passing the law? Is that the way the conservative mind works? They're just passing the law will instantly cause people to stop running over road workers. Like they were running over them right and left until we passed this law. And then people went, oh, it must be bad to run over road workers. I'll have to stop doing that. I'll have to find something else to run over. No, passing a law, making it a ridiculous punishment that, and I might say, you know, somebody might say, well, hey, you know, $10,000, it's a person's life. Is the money going to the widow? Does the money go to the family of the deceased? Or does the money go into the state's pockets? Who put the guy out there on the side of the highway, usually at some of the busiest times busiest traffic times, and had him out there working inches away from traffic? Who did that? Who designed the roads so that they are mind-numbingly boring to drive on? Who did this? Who placed the road worker in harm's way? Who decided to do that? Was that the driver or was that the state? Who decided that the best time of the day to have road maintenance done is during the daytime when most of the traffic is on the highway? Who made that decision? Who made the decision to put one highway there and force all the traffic onto that one highway rather than let individuals build the roads that they want to build and put the roads wherever they want to put them? Who made that decision? Was it the guy who ran over the worker or was it the state? Well, in the United States, the government socialized the roads in the 1920s. Prior to the 1920s, the federal government had no involvement in road building. Most people don't realize that. Most people don't realize that the first highway that connected the Gulf Coast with Canada in the United States, the first highway, was entirely private. It was a privately funded, privately built road. And that wasn't that long ago. It was after the invention of cars. And that was the motivation in building it. The man who built it was in the business of selling car parts. So he had an interest in there being highways. Who built the first coast-to-coast highway? Private business. Private individuals. Specifically the same guy. The same guy that built the Indianapolis 500 Motor Speedway. That guy, he had an interest. He had a business interest in encouraging people to drive cars and encouraging people to be enthusiastic about cars. So because of that, he was able to encourage investors to privately build highways. And then when the state figured this out, and the state saw what was going on, the state confiscated those highways. So, little interruption there. This is a good time. I'm not sure if I finished my point or not, or even if I had a point. This is a good time to break off and go to a totally different topic. Well, you know, really, it's not that different. This whole podcast, I've been kind of ragging on the right wing and the conservatives, and maybe to a certain extent, conservative Christians. One of the reasons that right-wing people, conservatives, and specifically conservative Christians, one of the reasons that they're incapable of examining new information in regards to what the state is really like, one of the reasons for that is because they believe an entirely false history of the United States. And this is, I suspect, I don't have the experience to prove this, but I suspect this is the case in most countries. But it's certainly the case here in the United States that your average right wing, your average conservative, your average Christian conservative, all of those people have this vision, have this dream of the past, this almost a mythology in their belief of what things used to be or what the country used to be like or what the government used to be like. And they all believe if we could just return to that, everything would be good. And they have idolized this fake history of theirs and just accepted it without any question. And there are layers and layers and layers in this myth that they believe. A real good example of this, some years ago, one of these evangelists, a guy by the name of Dudley Rutherford, he put out a YouTube video that was just so horribly packed full of lies and exaggerations that it was almost laughable if it wasn't that it was such an evil thing to do. He put out this video about the song, the Star Spangled Banner, the national anthem, so-called. And it was, his YouTube video was very emotionally done. He, you know, had images behind him, and he went through all this story of the Star Spangled Banner. And pretty much the only thing that he got right was that the name of the song is the Star Spangled Banner. Oh, no, wait, he got that wrong too. Because he indicated that Francis Scott Key had written this song, the Star Spangled Banner. Well, actually, he didn't. He wrote a poem, and the poem was later turned into a song, and then it was later renamed. So, you know, really, you can't say that Francis Scott Key wrote the song, the Star-Spangled Banner, when in fact he wrote a poem, and somebody else attached it to an existing song. They sort of Weird Al Yankovic'd it, if I can use that terminology, and they attached it to an existing song. And then a long time later, when extreme nationalism and the progressives, you know, and here's something that most conservatives have no clue that this is the case. the progressives are the ones who installed the Star Spangled Banner as the so-called national anthem. Progressives did that. And progressive is what? Progressive's a kind word for what we now call liberals. All you conservatives, think about this for a second. The worshiping of the flag, the pledging allegiance to the flag, and the singing songs to the flag, worshiping an inanimate object, was brought into this country, into the United States, and forcibly placed upon us by the progressives, by the very people you right-wingers, you conservatives, by the very people you look at as your enemy. You embrace these things, and yet they were brought on by socialists. It's amazing. It's really amazing. But anyway, back to my topic. So this slime, what was his name? Dudley Rutherford. The slime, Dudley Rutherford. Oh, I'm sorry, he likes to be called Pastor. Well, I don't call anybody Pastor. It's so close to an accurate word, though. You know, a pasture is a place where cows poop. So it might be appropriate to call him a pastor if we're talking about a pasture. Then it might, because there's a lot of bull manure there. And that's generally, I'm sorry, any pastors that are listening, I'm sorry if I'm offending you. But the vast majority of what I've heard coming from pastors belongs in a pasture. And that's the case with Dudley Rutherford. It's always fun to make fun of somebody's name, especially when they don't know about it. Dudley Rutherford. So he uses great amount of emotion, and then he lays out this huge, massive pile of lies. And, of course, he put it on YouTube, and it wasn't up very long at all. Like I said, this was a couple years ago. It wasn't up very long at all, and he yanked it down because he got so much heat. You know, it used to be, well, even today, most people, preachers or whatever you want to call yourselves, evangelists or whatever, you're isolated in your church there, and you're saying whatever you're saying, and there's nobody cross-checking you. And 5 minutes after you get done saying it, half of it is already forgotten, and hopefully that, you know, at least the person speaking hopes that you'll take some of what they say and hold on to it. But if you can just get the concept into somebody's mind, you've succeeded. Well, the problem is that as we move into this modern age, more and more stuff is getting recorded, and then there's a record of it, a recording. And that comes back to bite you if you don't do your homework and know that what you're talking about is, if you're not telling the absolute truth, if you're not cross-checking all your references and making sure that you're right before you speak. Nowadays, seeing that almost everything is recorded in one sense or another, to spout these things with nothing to back them up, you're just setting yourself up to look like a fool. So that's what Dudley did. Dudley spouted all this nonsense, put it on YouTube, and of course the internet tore him up. Because all it takes is just to Google Star Spangled Banner, and you have pages and pages and pages telling the real story, not the fake made-up one that Dudley is lying about. So of course he got caught. Of course the internet tore him up, point by point by point. One person after the next just ripped him apart. And so what did Dudley do? Well, the age of ignoring your mistakes and continuing with your lies is pretty much over. So what Dudley was forced to do was to yank down the video so nobody else would see it, and then put up a new video with a modified version of the story, one that was not so blatantly filled with lies, but one that still puts across the brainwashing that he was trying to accomplish in his original one. You see, what if a pastor was a true pastor, if they actually did what the Christian teaching and the Christian Bible tells us, then you would not be teaching people to worship the state. You would not be teaching people to set up idols like flags and essentially sing songs and swear oaths to them. If you actually did what the Bible told, if you actually served the function of a pastor, then you would say, tear down idols. You would say, do not swear oaths to idols. This is what you'd be teaching. But that's not, is it? You put up idols in your buildings, don't you? You have a flag outside your building? In your private schools? In your private church schools? Do you have your children put their hand on their heart and swear an allegiance to an inanimate object? Do they do that? That's called idolatry. You remember those Ten Commandments that you're so ready to fight about? Have you read them? Idolatry is idolatry. Swearing allegiance to anything is clearly forbidden in the Scriptures. And yet you teach your school children to put their hand on their heart, signifying life, signifying that they are swearing their life for an inanimate object. And you say, oh no, it's the concept. They're not actually swearing it to an inanimate object. Well, then you don't mind if I light one on fire and burn it, right? If it's an inanimate object and they're not swearing anything to the actual object, if it's just the concept, then you're perfectly comfortable throwing it on the ground and stepping on it? You're not, are you? Because you know it's more than that. You go to any pagan society where they worship some pagan object. You go to any into ancient history, go to the Romans, go to the Greeks, go to the Egyptians, go to the Persians. And they all had gods, and they all had idols. And they didn't actually believe that the statue they were looking at was the god. They didn't believe that. They simply didn't believe that. If you teach that to children in school, or in Sunday school, you teach children that they actually believed that these statues of marble and of wood and so forth, that they believe those were the God, you're not teaching the truth, because they didn't believe that. They believed it was a representation of their God. In the case of the Greeks, they believed all the statues, all the idols, were representations of the gods, and the gods were actually in one place and could come and go here and there. They actually believed that. They didn't believe that the idol was the God. They believed the idol represented the God. And to pray to the idol was the same as to pray to the God. And to swear an allegiance to the idol was the same as swearing allegiance to the God. That's what they actually believed. So when you use a flag under those same circumstances, the flag is representing the state. You believe in the state and you swear to the flag. It's idolatry. It's plain and simple. It's forbidden in the Scriptures and it's anti-Christian. Not only that, it's an invention of the left. It's socialism, conservatives. It's socialism. Every socialist regime has sought to do the same thing, whether they were the Nazis or whether they were any socialist system requires that kind of allegiance to the state. It's the standard thing. Conservatives, you're socialists. I've gone through this before and showed in a variety of different ways that the conservative is a socialist. They just are in denial about it. They won't stop and actually examine what it is that they believe. Instead, they condemn socialism, but then what they offer is socialism. Slightly different flavor than the left, slightly different flavor than the liberals, but at least the liberals are honest. At least they acknowledge that what they offer is socialism. The conservatives offer socialism and don't even realize it or deny it. So back to this video about the Star Spangled Banner. So Dudley Rutherford yanked the video, and I decided to try to find it the other day, and I started looking. And if you have me as on your friends list in Facebook, you may have seen that I put a request out for anybody who could find the video. But I had spent quite a bit of time, considering how much time that I have to search the internet for such things. I spent quite a bit of time on Google. trying to come up with different word combinations and searching in YouTube itself with different word combinations, trying to find a copy of this video. Because, you know, it's hard for me to believe that somebody had something that horrible up on the internet and then they pulled it down and nobody got a copy of it. That's just, that's almost inconceivable for me that this could happen. All those people who saw the video, who complained about the video, who went word for word and cut the video into pieces and showed how ridiculously wrong and full of lies that the video was. And yet, it's all gone. It's like it never was there. Now, we have the apology from Rutherford. We have the new video that he used to replace the old video with that still, you know, follows the point of trying to get people to worship an inanimate object. But how could the original video just vanish like that? It really lets me down. The internet has let me down. These things are supposed to, once somebody does something stupid on the internet, we're supposed to be able to mock them for it forever. You know, there's still all the standard mocking videos for all the other mistakes that people have made on the video. You know, backflips failed and face plants happen and skiing accidents and missed basketball jumps and all the things that are horribly embarrassing on the internet are still there, embarrassing people for eternity. And yet, this video by Dudley Rutherford, where he goes through and lays out all these lies. For instance, I'm not going to go through all the details, but in one point, he says that the entire British fleet surrounded Fort McHenry during the bombardment during the War of 1812, which inspired the poem for the Star Spangled Banner. He says in this original video that the entire British Navy was there. And he states it several times, or at least restates it a couple times, that not only was the entire British Navy there, he says all the ships of the British Navy, hundreds of them, he says, hundreds of them. Yeah, there was less than 20. There was, as a matter of fact, the commander of the British ships that was there, the commander didn't even have his entire fleet, much less the entire British fleet, much less hundreds of ships. It was just a guy, I believe he was stationed, coming out of Nassau, if I recall, and he had less than 20 of his fleet. He didn't even have his whole fleet. And yet Rutherford is more than happy to make this into a much bigger deal. Rutherford's got all kinds of people dying. I can't remember now. There was, in all actuality, there was like maybe three or four people who died at Fort McHenry during the bombardment, one of which was a female slave that was carrying water at the time. And he makes it out as being the fort was packed full of civilians. No, that's not the case. He has for some odd reason, he has in his story all the Navy ships trying to shoot down the flag. Well, why would they do that? When a naval bombardment of a fortress takes place, why would they focus on shooting down the flag? That's silly. That's entirely, that has no validity in any kind of military strategy to just shoot down the other side's flag. And yet that's the way Dudley tells the story in the original video. Like there was this great effort just to shoot down the flag. Well, if you get 19 ships in one spot, all firing black powder, the amount of smoke is going to be so dense that you can't tell where there's a flag, you can barely tell what direction to fire. Now, that's the reality. Black powder cannons make a huge amount of smoke. So whether the flag was there has nothing to do with the bombardment. The worship of flags didn't take place in the United States for another 100 years anyway. So it's just entirely stupid. I did find, even with all my searching, trying to find the video, I did find a website of an Idaho state senator named Ken Tim Corderer. If I can remember, I'll put a link to his page on Bad Quaker where this appears. And Tim is one of the many people who, before this got snatched away and went down the memory hole, Tim, this Idaho state senator, now keep in mind, in my book, a tax eater is a tax eater is a tax eater. But if he's kind enough to put all the work into it, I'll take advantage of it. He went through and literally, line by line, picked this original video apart. He puts the false statement in bold, and then he makes comments about it. For instance, let me just pull one of them here. Okay, here's one section where he just peels out a piece of the video and then just tears it apart. I'll read it for you. This part is quoting the video, quoting Rutherford from the video. He went down beneath the bottom of those boats, and what he found was a cargo hold full of humanity, full of prisoners, full of men. He said, "Men, I've got some good news for you. Tonight, you're going to be free." He said, "Earlier today, I negotiated successfully your return to the colonies. You're going to be taken out of this boat, out of this filth, out of these chains." And then Tim says this. Now I'm quoting Tim. "Flat out lies. One man only was freed and not a multitude. And it wasn't today that man would be returned, because Key and Skinner had seen the size and disposition of the British fleet. They were not allowed to depart the ship Torrent until the battle was over. And of course, when they did depart, it was to the United States, not colonies. And while there was a boat, there was no more than the usual amount of filth and no report of any chains." So what Rutherford here says is entirely... Okay, I've finished quoting Tim there. What Rutherford says here is not only... It's almost laughably wrong. He went down beneath the bottom of those boats, and what he found was a cargo full of humanity, full of prisoners. Yeah, no, there was one. There was no gang of prisoners. There was one. It wasn't full of men. There was one guy. And then he quotes this dramatic quote. Well, where'd that come from? "Men, I've got some good news for you. Tonight you're going to be free." Where'd that quote come from? How do we know he said that? Where's that written down anywhere? Of course it's not. That's an entire fabrication. That's entirely a lie. And then he says, "I negotiated your successful return to the colonies." What an idiot, Rutherford. This is the War of 1812. The United States broke away from Great Britain in the War of Independence in the 1770s, not the War of 1812. You can't even get that right. Okay, well, I've gone long enough. I have to wrap this up now. So I'm going to quit picking on this idiot Rutherford, this con artist Rutherford, this moron Dudley Rutherford, and I'll thank Tim Corder for going to all the effort to write this thing out. Tim was much more polite, well, as you just heard. Tim was much more polite in dealing with Rutherford than me. Thank you very much for listening to BadQuaker.com. As always, go over to BadQuaker.com and you will find more on liberty, the zero aggression principle, and property rights. Thanks a lot, folks.